The Platonic solids, of course, are all the same geometries we've been discussing here. The tetrahedron, cube, octahedron, icosahedron, and dodecahedron. The details are quite technical, but here's the gist of what Dr. Moon found. The same geometric shapes we see in the expansion of the Earth also appear within the nucleus of the atom. Furthermore, in Moon's model, more than one geometric form can nest within the nucleus at the same time, each one inside the next. This geometry actually determines how many protons our scientists will find in any one atom. The trick is to count the number of points on each of the so-called platonic solids. There are 8 points on a cube, 6 on an octahedron, 12 on an icosahedron, and 20 on a dodecahedron, for a total of 46. In Moon's model, that's the first half of the naturally occurring elements in the periodic table. Moon knew there are a total of 92 elements that appear in nature, or 2 times 46. So he believed that every atom with an atomic weight of 47 or higher was a combination of 2 nests of geometry connected side by side, growing increasingly unstable along the way. You may have noticed Dr. Moon did not include the tetrahedron in this grouping. He feels that since the geometric opposite of the tetrahedron is still a tetrahedron, it plays a different role. Indeed, in Rod Johnson's model, as well as Buckminster Fuller's earlier model, a photon appears as 2 tetrahedrons back to back, and we have the solid data to prove it in Planck's constant. Anyway, some very cool things happen when you use Moon's model. The first completed shell in the nucleus is the cube, with 8 protons. This corresponds to oxygen, which is highly stable and makes up 62.55% of all the atoms in the Earth's crust. It is also interesting that oxygen is one of the single most important elements to sustain life. The second completed shell is the octahedron with 14 protons, and now you have silicon, which comes in at 21.22%. Although we are considered carbon-based life forms, silicon is also very important for biological life and seems to be the key ingredient in the spontaneous generation experiments, such as Dr. Ignacio Pacheco's work with the silicon in beach sand. So, between these first 2 shells alone, oxygen with a cubical nucleus and silicon with an octahedron-shaped nucleus, you have 84% of all the atoms in the Earth's crust. Then, when you move up to complete the next shape, the icosahedron, you now have 26 protons. This is the iron atom, which is the best metal we have for creating naturally occurring magnetic fields. This hidden geometric symmetry may very well be responsible for iron's magnetic properties by acting as a conduit for the source field, as we will discuss. Of all the atoms in the Earth's crust, 1.20% are iron, but they add up to 5% of the total weight. Then, the dodecahedron fills up at 46 protons, and you now have palladium, which is an unusually symmetrical atom that was used in all the cold fusion experiments. And in case you think cold fusion was all just a waste of time, don't forget that Dr. Eugene Malov resigned from his position as the chief editor of MIT's technical newsletter when he allegedly discovered they were falsifying their own data on cold fusion, as if to say there was no effect. According to a paper by Lawrence Hecht, Moon's model satisfies all sorts of quantum puzzles, including the processes of fission and fusion, the mystery period of 14 for the rare earth elements, the exact number of elements in each row of the periodic table, and Maria Geppert-Mayer's magic numbers, in which the properties of the nucleus tend to suddenly change at certain numbers that curiously reappear, whether you're looking at protons, neutrons, or the mass number. Hecht has continued developing and refining Moon's model ever since Moon's death in 1989. Microclusters and quasicrystals. I was even more impressed when I found out that atoms naturally gather together into these exact same geometric patterns when they are set loose one at a time in a given area. These are called microclusters, and they are completely baffling to mainstream scientists. The microcrystals floating in the pineal gland may be similar, albeit larger. A 1989 issue of Scientific American revealed that microclusters do not have characteristics like liquids or gases. They belong instead to a new phase of matter, the microcluster. They pose questions that lie at the heart of solid-state physics and chemistry. How might the atoms reconfigure if freed from the influence of the matter that surrounds them? I then found the college textbook Microcluster Physics by Satoru Sugano and Hiroyasu Koizumi, which revealed even more, including compelling images of the geometry. Microclusters can be anywhere between 10 to 1,000 atoms. The strangest thing about them is that the electrons appear to orbit the center of the cluster rather than the center of each individual atom. Of course, this weird behavior suggests there are no electrons. Instead, what scientists actually see is geometrically arranged electron clouds, which appear to be where the fluid-like flow of the source field enters into the atom. Once some of this stored energy is released from the atom, it turns into a photon, which then looks like a particle. Microclusters are also called monatomic elements, or ormus elements, in various sources, elegantly summarized in Lawrence Gardner's Lost Secrets of the Sacred Arc. Microclusters appear to display gravitational anomalies, including levitation, under certain circumstances, as well as superconductivity. Ancient peoples believed that taking microcluster gold would awaken their pineal glands, and the Egyptians even stored it in cone-shaped cakes. Yet another tantalizing clue that atoms are geometric patterns within a fluid-like energy flow is the phenomenon of quasicrystals. In this case, you have crystals that look just like the platonic solids we've been discussing, including the dodecahedron, along with other forms. They are created by supercooling certain combinations of molten metals at a very fast speed, apparently capturing the molecules while they are flip-flopping between space-time and time-space, and freezing them into a half-in, half-out crystal pattern. The problem is that these crystals destroy all the known rules of crystal formation. They should not be able to exist because you cannot build perfect five-sided crystals out of atoms that are made of particles. According to Edgar Fouché, who claims to have worked at the semi-mythical Groom Lake, Area 51, quasicrystals were found in wreckage recovered from the Roswell crash and 8 other similar incidents. They were found to be extremely strong, extremely heat-resistant, and would not conduct electricity, even though the metals within them normally did. Fouché also said they were found to be very useful. I've discovered that the classified research has shown that quasicrystals are promising candidates for high-energy storage materials, metal matrix components, thermal barriers, exotic coatings, infrared sensors, high-power laser applications, and electromagnetics. Some high-strength alloys and surgical tools are already on the market. Here, he's obviously referring to Kevlar and Teflon, which some insiders say were reverse-engineered from crashed extraterrestrial craft. Fouché also said these crystals were baffling to the scientists working in these projects. The lattice of hydrogen quasicrystals and another material not named formed the basis for the plasma shield propulsion of the Roswell craft and was an integral part of the biochemically engineered vehicle. A myriad of advanced crystallography undreamed of by scientists were discovered by the scientists and engineers who evaluated, analyzed, and attempted to reverse engineer the technology presented with the Roswell vehicle, and 8 more vehicles which have crashed since then. Arguably, after 35 years of secret research on the Roswell hardware, those who had recovered these technologies still had hundreds, if not thousands, of unanswered questions about what they had found. And it was deemed safe to quietly introduce quasicrystals to the non-initiated scientific world. Obviously, with our new quantum mechanics model in place, we are now much closer to understanding how these crystals may have formed, and it seems that our visitors know much more about this science than we do. Rocks with naturally occurring quasicrystals. In Lost Science by Jerry Vassilatos, I found the intriguing suggestion that certain rocks may have naturally occurring quasicrystals in them. Apparently, Dr. Charles Brush, an American physical chemist who studied gravity in the Victorian era, found certain rocks known as Linz basalts, which actually fell more slowly than other materials by a tiny but measurable amount. As he studied them further, he also found they had an unusual amount of excess heat. While this would obviously sound crazy to most people, it makes perfect sense when we remember that if you have the right coherence, which we now know means the right geometry, you can indeed get a gravity shielding effect and may also be able to pull in energy directly from time-space. Dr. Thomas Townsend Brown got samples of these rocks and found that they would spontaneously give off surprisingly high voltages. Just putting wires on the rocks could give you several millivolts, and if you sliced them up into multiple pieces, you could get a full volt of free energy when you put them all together. Brown also found that the rock batteries would get stronger at 6 p.m. and weaker again at 7 a.m., showing that the light and heat of the sun had a decohering effect on the energy they were pulling in. They also worked better at higher elevations, possibly thanks to a pyramid effect from mountains. Other inventors, such as Hadowinek, independently duplicated and verified these same results. According to Vassilatos, certain researchers traveled to the Andes and got up to 1.8 volt surges from a single rock. The more graphite was in the rocks, the more voltage they put out. Best of all, Brown found that they gave off 2 different electrical signals. One was steady, but the other would fluctuate with solar activity and the positions and configurations between the sun and the moon. He also found that distant pulses of gravity in space caused small electrical bursts in the rocks. Other rocks that were rich in silica also produced these charges. Brown was able to spot pulsar activity and supernovas long before they were announced by radio astronomers, as well as solar flares, even though the rocks were shielded from radioactivity, heat, and light. In the same book, Vassalatos reveals the work of Dr. Thomas Henry Morey, another suppressed scientist who apparently found an even more powerful rock with the same properties. Morey only referred to it as the Swedish Stone and did not say where exactly it came from. It was a soft, silvery white material he found in two different areas, one from a rock outcropping in crystalline form, and another from a smooth white powder he scraped off of a railroad car. When he tried to use the crystal as a piezoelectric detector for radio waves, the signal came out with such power that it destroyed his headphones. Even a very large loudspeaker would blast at an extremely high volume whenever he tuned in to a given radio station. Morey was able to use this material to create an extremely powerful free energy device, and even his first prototype, which only used a wristwatch-sized piece of Swedish stone, could simultaneously run a 100-watt light bulb and a 655-watt electric heater. The deeper he drove his grounding rods into the ground, the brighter the light became. In 1925, he demonstrated this technology to the Salt Lake City General Electric Company, as well as several qualified witnesses from Brigham Young University. They tried everything they could to prove it was a fraud and were allowed to disassemble the entire setup, but they could find nothing. Later, Morey developed prototypes that could pump out 50 kilowatts of energy, enough to power a small factory all day, every day, without ever running out or needing to pay for energy. Morey began trying to secure a patent in 1931, but was continually refused. And in 1939, the Rural Electrification Association sent a scientific expert, along with others, for a meeting with Morey. It turned out they were carrying guns and intended to kill him. But Morey had his own firearm and shot back, driving them off. As a result, Morey replaced all the windows on his car with bulletproof glass and felt he had to constantly carry a revolver. He was never bothered again, but his breakthrough technology also never saw the light of day. Later, he found that the Swedish stone was doing other strange things. For example, he found that by using a standard radio receiver, he was tuning in the sounds of people's conversations and other day-to-day activities at long distances away, even though there were no microphones in those areas. He was able to travel to the exact sources of the sounds and confirm that he was picking them up. He also found that significant healing effects occurred from these stones as well. Then, by 1961, Morey found he could direct the energy fields his devices generated to grow microcrystals, sound familiar, of gold, silver, and platinum from otherwise worthless soil that came from where these elements were mined. Soil that initially only had 0.18 ounces of gold per ton could be used to produce as much as 100 ounces of gold and 225 ounces of silver. He had achieved the alchemist's dream of transmutation, in this case, by starting with tiny crystals of gold, silver, or platinum that were already in the soil and causing them to grow much, much larger, like seeds. Through similar techniques, he was able to manufacture lead that was impossible to melt below 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit, and copper that was extremely strong and heat-resistant, which he used as bearings in high-speed motors. Another alloy he developed could be heated to 12,000 degrees Fahrenheit without melting. According to Vassalatos, Morey attempted to synthesize more of the Swedish stone on his own and submitted it to a comprehensive microanalytical profile. From these results, we now know the main ingredient was ultra-pure germanium, which does contain a small, relatively harmless amount of radioactivity that can easily be shielded. Arthur L. Adams, a retired electrical engineer, found a smooth, silvery-gray material in whales in the 1950s that also created extraordinary amounts of power on its own. When a special battery made from slices of these stones was dipped in water, the power became far more substantial. And when the stones were taken out, the water continued to produce electrical power for hours, not unlike the DNA phantom effect. British authorities seized all Adams' research papers and materials, claiming this was being done for future social distribution. That time obviously has not yet arrived. Genetic geometry. Amino acids fit together to make proteins. These rules are complex, and scientists really don't understand why certain amino acids fit together and others do not. Dr. Mark White analyzed these relationships and found that everything makes sense if you map out the amino acids over the surface of a dodecahedron. What is the ideal form of a DNA molecule? It is a double helix. What is the ideal form of the double helix? It is a dodecahedron. What is the ideal form of the genetic code? It is also a dodecahedron. As important as the double helix was toward understanding DNA, the dodecahedron is equally important toward understanding the genetic code, perhaps more so. The same geometric laws seem to appear in quantum mechanics, planetary geodynamics, and life itself, thanks to the fact that the source field is fluid-like, and geometry naturally appears when a fluid is pulsated. Pyramids and other funnel-shaped structures harness this flow and generate coherence in a given area, creating increasingly refined geometric patterns, and thus healing biological life, improving our mental health, regularizing the flow of currents in the mantle, the oceans, the atmosphere, and the ionosphere to protect us from cataclysms, and improving the hardness and purity of crystalline structures. This science may also pave the way for a wealth of free energy technologies that could permanently end our crippling dependence on oil and usher in a new era of peace, freedom, and prosperity that we may never have dreamed possible before.